Yeah, I still find myself talking with people about it all the time.
Well, it's because you don't know what else to talk about.
There's not a lot else to talk about, really.
There's plenty to talk about. So what's new?
Not much. Just watching shows, keeping up. I'm pretty proud of myself because I got my DVR down to pretty much not a lot of new stuff on there. I've got like Flight of the Phoenix, the original, on there, and some Symbiotic Titans to rewatch because that's the only way you can watch them. They're not on DVD or anything. And some old Mad Men's that I haven't seen yet, but I'm all caught up on all the NBC Hoopla and all that other stuff.
Some old Mad Maxes?
No.
Is that what you said?
No. Mad Men.
What's new in the world of bonfires? What kind of new bonfire technologies?
Well, I cleaned out the burn pit and kind of, you know, repaired it a little because it was a little bent up. I flipped it, of course.
Flipped it, right.
So that the metal doesn't, you know, get all just eroded on one side. And, yeah, built a new burn poker stick from a piece of conduit that was bent in one place. So it's conduit. It's got a hooked edge now. Yeah.
So now it's got a hooked edge. So now you can
kind of get in there really
shepherd's.
Yeah, yeah. You can really work it.
Get in there and work it. You can really hook around the pieces you want to move and just kind of finagle them into place.
A lot better.
Whereas before you kind of had to do a almost like a rowing motion. Right?
Yeah. Before
really
it was like
you had to really get in there. Now you can just.
You were like a boat pilot in Venice, and now you're just, you know, sky's the limit.
Boat pilots in Venice, don't they just use long sticks?
Yeah.
That means that the water only goes down how far?
As far as those sticks, man. They'd be able to tell you. I wouldn't. I apparently, it's still sinking, right?
I don't know.
I think it is.
Sinking into what?
Like where the water's rising or whatever, you know?
Why is the water rising?
Because I think the town has been sinking for years. Mm. Like a long time. But yeah, you're right. It's a funny
story.
See,
the thing about a stick and water is sometimes the water just won't let it go. And by the time your boat's getting farther and farther away, you got to pull that thing all the way up. What do they do, this?
I think so.
They monkey bar it, or they gym class rope it.
They hand over half hand it, yeah.
And then they put it back down and just they let it slide through, you think? What's the technique?
I don't know, man. I haven't seen one. There's got to be at least... I bet there's a documentary. I bet there's three documentaries on Netflix just about boat pilots in Venice.
Located in a marshy lagoon.
Yeah, sounds about
That's
right.
That's what they say.
Venice.
See about it sinking. Last Crusade is a pretty good representation of Venice, I think.
Well, they actually shot it there, right?
Yeah, they actually shot it there.
What else is in Venice? We got Last Crusade, we got the end of Casino Royale, the beginning of the new version
wasn't
of Italian Job.
Wasn't that movie with Johnny Depp and What's-Her-Butt set there? I never saw it. I just thought that from the previous.
Oh, possibly. I didn't see it either. That one, that comedy with Angelina Jolie and Johnny Depp?
Yeah, comedy-ish, but not
yeah,
really.
Yeah, whatever. I didn't see it. When Ricky Gervais got in trouble for making fun of him about, like, the Golden Globes nominated them for that just to have them there.
Yeah.
So raise the profile. There's kind of an odd one with, it's Natasha Richardson, and I don't think her and Liam Neeson were both in it, but maybe they were, and Christopher Walken, where they're like this couple, and I remember saw part of it on Bravo years ago when Bravo used to do the IFC Fridays. Saw a lot of movies that way. So I saw Barton Fink. I think I've talked about this on the podcast before. We're getting cannibalistic here.
You remember when Milhouse rolls up in the back of the car and tells Bart that they're going to go see a rated R movie?
Yeah, it's Barton Fink.
And then they go away chanting Barton Fink.
Yeah.
And he's like, I wish I could, but I'm doing this thing.
It was good.
All right, have fun.
That was funny because it was very true and effective of like what most rated R movies generally are. They're
yeah.
not at all interesting.
Something that
to
a
kids.
Kid wouldn't yeah. be interested in the least.
Yeah. By and large, that is that first funny lesson of being a kid is when you, things are denied to you and so you want to see them, and then when you end up realizing like, oh yeah, no, I don't want this.
Nah.
I mean, because when you're a kid, you just don't, you know.
I mean, certain rated R. I mean, you were given a taste of the forbidden fruit with RoboCop.
RoboCop,
and that's full of bloody goodness,
right? But I mean,
that's
like
that does kind of
when you're young, that is a little more.
And then after
shocking.
That, you're like, I'm going to see some more rated R's, man. I can't wait to see My Left Foot.
Right. Okay, So, welcome to the Futile Podcast. That was the longest intro ever. Anyway, we're going to talk about some real stuff. We're going to talk about some Justified.
The Justin Timberlake album?
The Justin Timberlake album, J-Fied.
He's coming back, man.
I've heard that.
He's bringing sexy back, I hear.
Well, good for him.
That's a little joke.
Isn't it now?
I just made that up.
Justin Timberlake, the Bing Crosby of our generation.
Justified.
Season 3.
Season 3. So you finished Season 3.
Yeah, I'm completely caught up.
So what did you think of Season 3? Let's hear Season 3.
Watch Season 3 really fast and partially drunk.
Partially drunk.
Well, I watched the first five pretty drunk. Okay. So I couldn't really remember what happened in that Dewey episode. I just know he had both his kidneys gone and it became kind of like a crank episode, which was kind of funny. I mean, this was a really plot-heavy season. It was a lot of moving parts. It was, I think season three was probably my favorite of the three seasons because it was so focused around that. Mm-hmm. But it did have obvious like trade-offs and downsides. There wasn't nearly as much for any of the characters, including the Raylan Givens character. There wasn't. Not that there wasn't anything too forward. At this point,
they're kind of happy having him be like an equal share partner with basically like
the ensemble. The ensemble got kind of cheated in this.
There was just a lot of
it was just a lot of shit to happen.
People in it.
Yeah, and there was it was a massive if kind of convoluted thing because you had the law, mm-hmm. which was not just the marshals, but for at one point was the FBI. You had the Detroit element. You had the Dixie Mafia.
Lexington element.
You had the Crowder element.
Mm-hmm. And you got the Noble Holler.
And then you get the Noble Holler people. So there's like, already there's like between five and seven different kind of interweaving.
And that guy, components. Was that a guy from?
It was Michael T. Williams.
From The Wire, right? Is that what he's from?
No, what's no. He from?
I don't know
he's
who he
from
is.
Heat.
He's from Heat.
He's one of the cops in Heat. He's got a great what's scene
he, what
in
else
Heat.
Is he from? Because people talk about like he's beloved from TV.
Wait, people do?
Yeah.
He's probably in other things. Mark mentioned that he was someone. Oh no, he was also in Forrest Gump, which I couldn't.
Oh, yeah,
I didn't
he was
recognize.
Bubba.
Yeah, he
was he
Bubba.
Bubba Gump,
and I didn't get that at all. Gump. And I'm like, oh okay, I guess so. How
Bubba
about
Gump
that?
Is the name of their shrimp company,
right? But no, but his name was Bubba.
Yeah, his name was Bubba. Yeah,
yeah, but not Gump.
Well, no, I'm thinking that because the restaurants that are named after the shrimp company in the movie.
Yeah,
and when you go into one of the restaurants, it's full of Forrest Gump memorabilia.
Of course. But, yeah, no, he's good. He was really good in the season.
He was an interesting, you expected them to be really, you know, rotten bad people, just like all the rotten bad people.
Well, kind of. It would have been.
But he ended up being much more like, you know what, they just wanted to be left alone.
He's pragmatic.
Wanted to be left alone.
He was very pragmatic, and he laid that out, and, I mean, you know, he'd play the sides when he needed to, when they were pretty much when they came to his doorstep, and they all came to his doorstep.
Right.
But he kept himself distanced, and he had his people kind of focused and in a good place. And you know, Limehouse was an interesting character, and I'm hoping that they get back into him at some point. So yeah, so no real criticism there, but it was like, you know, kind of disappointing not to see more from the other marshals. Like they're like afterthoughts in almost the entire season. There's a little bit with Art.
Oh, he was beloved from the critically acclaimed but commercially unsuccessful crime drama Boomtown.
He was on Boomtown with Boomtown.
It looks like he was on the final season of 24.
The final season?
Yeah.
Maybe he was like the CIA guy. Seth and I watched the final season or part of it. That show was crazy. No, he's good. He's just got a really good scene with Ashley Judd in Heat where he like sits down and explains to her how like there's one of two ways that things can go with her situation.
What'd you think of the guy that your brother says is just like you?
Neil McDonough. I think that's there was a bit of an oversell with his menace.
He totally was. But I thought it was so funny that he kept saying that.
Yeah.
And so I was totally wanting to buy into it. And then every episode, because he was watching him like a night or two before I was every time. And so I was totally just waiting for it. And it never really came.
No.
He was just kind of nutty.
Yeah, he was kind of nutty. But the problem is, like, even within the show, they kind of did too much building up. Even at the end when it's like, that whole final episode was set up where it could have been, like, a crazy manhunt. And, like, you know, and the bad guys kept going, like, oh, no, because he's, like, he's worth more alive than he is dead, you know?
Right.
He's worth 2,000 alive and or 200,000 alive and 100,000 dead. And they're like, okay, good, we'll keep him alive. It's like, I wouldn't. And it's like, really? In the end, I mean, I did get a kick out of the fact that they took the archetype of, like, the guy that comes from out of the area who's, like, kind of scary and from the big leagues.
But he's desperate.
But he's desperate. He's totally a failure. Desperate, And it illustrates how when someone's out of their element, that doesn't mean that they're better. You know, like, the city guy isn't better than the country bumpkin. Right. So that was a novel approach. But was it kind of a disappointing sale on this guy being, like, the big, heavy threat for the season?
Yeah. He was the wild card.
Yeah, but it ended up, you know, but the season had so much other things going on that it wasn't like if, like, season two was pretty heavy. Like, Mags needed to be threatening. You needed to feel, like, and you got that quick in that season when she poisoned that guy. Like, for almost no good reason. And so you're like, okay, this lady is, like, a Shakespearean level, like kind of threatening, menacing female force kind of thing.
The strength of the focus of the second season with that family.
The Bennets,
Hating his family, except for she gets along with him.
Yeah.
And then the Crowders being involved was, like, that. I think that, because of that, the third one seems maybe, like, disjointed. But I think you're right. I think maybe it was... I think maybe I liked the second one best, the second season best so far. The third season was really good.
Third season, I think, was just, like, a real peak. Like I said, you talk about all those different elements that they incorporated and then made work. There were aspects of disjointedness. Usually those happen, and I'd say that that's a pattern with this show so far within the early part of the season where it's still kind of fine. Like, it'll be a one-off episode
or something. They even did that in the first season.
They
hinted at arc things along the way, but, like, the first half of the whole first season was just, like, they might do connect them to the next thing kind of a little bit, but it was mostly one-offs, and a lot of them was just, like, crime show stories. Yeah. Like, hey, here's the thing about a dentist. Oh, here's the thing about this other guy.
But within that, you were able to kind of do character-y stuff. Like, the one about,
and,
like,
then by
the
end,
Hitler paintings and stuff.
Yeah, right.
That was a good one.
And then by the end, they'd gotten to...
Yeah.
You know, where the series was actually going to be headed with
exactly.
And, you know.
And I feel like now that the show's kept going, one thing I liked at the time and was thinking they weren't going to do was have think of how much sort of closure and finality happens in the end of the first season.
Yeah.
Boyd's dad dies in the end of the first season. And you're almost, now that we're three seasons in, you're kind of like, that's a lot of chapter closing that's happened every season with these these interesting characters. And in some cases, it's like you get an interesting character at the beginning of an episode, and then that character's dead by the end of that episode.
Right.
And you're like, oh, wow, that's a waste of someone I'd like to see play out more and stuff. I mean, so it's like a fault, but not a real, but also a strength. You know, like, it's being concise, it's being effective. You're going to get a beginning, middle, and end in every season.
Right.
But at a certain point,
you're
see
talking about what they did with that knife guy who looked like Scott Weiland, right?
Oh, in the beginning of the first step of season three,
that guy was awesome. he was really over the top. But anyone who comes in is like super confident. And then the way he just kind of slowly moves the tablecloth and then shoots the guy.
And then they tied into her like trying to fix up the place.
Yeah.
I love that. No, and I like that, and I was fine with that guy to be gone. I was more thinking of, in season one, there was the guy who was, like, the loan shark, who wanted to be, like, a gardener.
Right.
And then I'm like, this guy, this was a total Elmore Leonard-type character. And I'm like, I'd love to see this guy for a few episodes. And then, but in typical Elmore Leonard fashion, you know, you add, you humor, do whatever, and then these guys are criminals.
Yeah.
These things have stakes. Somebody gets killed.
That's the one thing I keep forgetting is, I mean, I always know in the back of my head that Elmore Leonard's involved, and, you know, it's based on his stuff, and I think he plays a large part in the guiding of the voices.
It seems like he's written at least one episode, co-written an episode per season,
and
too.
So he's got to be in the writer's room, he's got to be kind of talking to them about stuff like that.
He's probably not in the room all the time, but he's probably involved.
But every once in a while I start thinking, like, how big, you know, this is supposed to be a small town. Like, how big is this place that everybody is just criminals?
Yeah,
everybody
exactly.
is criminals. But that, like you said, that's in typical Elmore Leonard fashion. Like, everybody is criminals.
Or everybody's just involved. And, I mean, they establish that Harlan County, they establish all this, these elements to kind of give you a sense.
They give you the idea that there's a strong enough sense of community, that the people don't like selling out their own, whether or not they're criminals and stuff like that.
Partially.
So people, it's kind of like shut in and hemmed off from the rest of...
The sheriff character being such a sort of cartoony, corrupt guy in season three was a bit of a weakness to me. I would have
talking about the one that took over.
No. Okay. That guy's
a little more realistic,
and that could be more interesting later on in season four. They start even hinting at
the guy before was he was pretty cartoony. He was just a rat bastard.
Yeah, he was, and so it was kind of like. And I mean, those are things like they hadn't thought about it, you know, because that character would
Judge
Root. Some of them. Who?
Judge.
Oh yeah, Stephen Root. Yeah, they keep using him, bringing him around. He's good.
I like Stephen Root.
And even Open Face as the DA is good. All the Pete and Pete fans out there, remember he was the bully Open Face.
It's so funny.
Not to be confused with Paper Cut. But I mean, I think so. For me, I'd have to say. I think season 3 has been my favorite so far because it just had so much happening, so many moving parts. But it was not as... Maybe it was less fun at a certain point because once you've kind of gotten certain things for the characters, you do start feeling like...
Two seemed like it was kind of the most dire and there was the most stakes. There was the most sense of dread hanging over it. And there wasn't that so much in 3.
I don't know. Towards the end of 3, it got pretty, like, intense.
It did, but...
Tom got shot.
Yeah. But, and then there was, you know, there was the threat of... people going after his wife and things like that. But for the most part, by that season, he'd already been relegated to that.
Yeah.
You know, he's still the main guy, but it's like a main guy side role thing with all these players involved.
Yeah.
And so he's kind of lurking in the background of where these things are happening. Really, the Sword of Damocles was really hanging over the head of Boomtown, mostly.
Right.
He was really the person who had the most threat going on toward him at most times.
That was kind of a weird spin on the
which made him dangerous. And then the stuff they did, you know, I mean, by the end of the season, really kind of the most powerful character stuff they did was probably with Arlo, and making him like, I mean,
he just turns out to be an out and out
murderer and right. That line that was, I mean, it was a pretty devastating line where that they said, saw a man in a hat. And what's funny is that, you know, all that just continually rolls off Raylan's back. He's just always like, yeah.
Well, you get it, but you also don't get it. And it does connect to the first episode with his general just anger.
Yeah.
But this season 3 and even into season 4 has been a lot of, like you said, he's kind of been relegated and he seems to be playing it that way too.
Yeah.
He's kind of like half hungover, half drunk
most of the time.
And you're not quite sure what
do you ever read
the
TV Club reviews on AV Club?
No,
so
sometimes.
The reason I still read them for a lot of shows, even shows I don't watch, is because after they give a rundown, they have all these bullet point.
Oh yeah, yeah, I read
the bullet point stuff. Is funny. It's always funny because they're
Batman
like
beatdowns.
They keep saying that this week in Raylan's movie club, and they talk about whatever movie he said he watched on Netflix, which he's been doing for like weeks in a row now.
On the show?
Yeah.
I don't remember.
Like, he mentions that he saw this, and this last week, I forget what they said he saw, I watched it, but... and then also, they said one of their favorite things was a continued sign of his assholism, was where, he comes into the bar and taps Rachel on the left shoulder and sits down at her right, and she's like...
Yeah, no, yeah.
He's just a dick.
He's just playing with everybody.
Yeah, he is, but
that was good.
His general demeanor with everyone. It's like he's just kind of there.
That's his demeanor with the people that are in his inner circle, I think.
You still want them to do something with Tim, don't you?
Oh, absolutely, man. I mean, instead you kind of get, it was kind of funny, but you get Art just kind of telling that other guy that wanted his job or thought he might get his job everything that, like, we all had kind of gotten into. Yeah. Like, it's like, I'd be interested to see the Tim PTSD episode, if that really is what the case is with him. And I don't know, maybe it's not, because he seems very, very unflappable.
I still think that his secret thing that they always hint at is just that he's gay.
Maybe.
It's probably just it, which wouldn't be a big deal, but it's Kentucky and the Marshal Service, and maybe they, you know.
I mean, it would also be kind of easy, too, at this point.
Yeah, it would be.
Which, I mean, I don't...
Art had such a
it's
a
like,
good
do that, and then do something else that's actually dramatically compelling, because at this point, like I said, it's the 21st century.
The funny Art line was when he's berating them for letting the lady escape, he says something about letting the sexy grandma... get away.
Uh-huh.
And Raylan's like, she's not a grandmother. He's like, I know, but it sounds funnier.
Yeah. yeah, that was in season 4. No, they did do a little more with Tim, and it just kind of felt like they wanted him there in some, where it's like, now Art and Raylan and Tim are all going to go see this group.
Well, you know, one thing is that they definitely use Rachel and Tim in ways that are like not necessary, but they're just doing it to keep them in the show. Yeah. You know, like
that's what season three felt like, because they really didn't do anything in season three.
Not much.
She kicked that dude in the ball.
Yeah, Rachel had yeah.
And I'm trying to remember because it's been so long. Did they get into the stuff with her, like, and her husband in season two?
That was in three, I think.
There was actually like an episode for her.
Yeah,
because she got an episode, I think, with like
it was her and her brother.
Her brother in one.
Yeah. I think
seasons.
That was three.
That was in season three. I thought it was in season two.
Maybe it
wasn't
two. I thought it was in three.
Well, no, you know, no, it wasn't in three because I just watched all of three in 2 days, and there was nothing for her or him in that. And that's unfortunate because they're both interesting characters too. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. We got the thing with the wife that's pregnant, or the ex-wife, and
right.
So I don't know. Season four so far, it's always tough to judge. Who knows where it's going?
Yeah, it's in that period where you just don't know what's
and
happening.
Honestly, I'm
I like the stuff with the.
You like the church stuff? Because I'm kind
the
of tired
stuff,
of it.
The church stuff is okay. I mean, I'm interested to see where it goes. I really.
It looks like it might go somewhere interesting now. They're moving it.
But
longer.
The guy who's the street fighter.
Oh yeah, that's very compelling.
Was super compelling, and
I don't know if they dashed it completely or what.
I'm not sure, but you know what's funny is that they totally one thing they're able to do with him, where they can't with they don't do with in shows with like you know CSI and stuff.
Yeah.
Is like. Point out the guy's flaws in a way that's like he just screwed up and he should have done this and he you know he was getting played by the waitress and all that stuff, you know, like totally
which still the more I've scratched my head about that, and you know me, I'm a huge misogynist, you know. I can't connect the dots on that for the life of me, unless the husband coming back
yeah
turned her. I don't know if she always was that way.
Or
you know what I mean?
He forced her. He didn't seem like the type of guy who.
Such a strange long con that doesn't make a lot of sense.
Exactly, and I don't think it was directed toward him, but he's now part of it and was suckered as part of it. So he wasn't really suckered, but they went through his stuff. Like,
they took all the money he was saving for his kids. Right. You know, doing all the moonlight and stuff.
And she even warned him at that part where she was back up there and says nothing to worry about, and he. Says something about how she was a bad girl, and she says how she still is. Like, she's basically telling him right there that.
But that's just pillow talk garbage. It doesn't mean anything.
Pillow talk means everything in a show.
Okay, right.
It does. It's always the most enlightening. I don't know, and he really has devolved into someone who like.
I kind of like that.
He goes to the bar. He has to go to the bar straight after work because that's where he lives.
Yeah.
And he just starts drinking. And when he gets, and before it seems like half the time before he leaves, he looks like he's gonna reach for something before he gets coffee.
Yeah.
It's pretty funny, and he just seems so like lazy at this point.
He's kind of wiped out.
He's letting his hair kind of grow kind of long, and the hat's just always kind of at some. He looks older too.
He does. Totally he looks does. Much older I, between by this season.
The way they go back and forth between the furious him to the one who just doesn't give a crap about anything.
It's kind of fun.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not my favorite show I've ever seen. It's pretty enjoyable.
I think we both kind of like it for the fact that it's not really a procedural show. Yeah. It's got some of those elements, but it doesn't make it tedious.
Good dramatic stuff, and it's got some good like pulpy stuff.
And good character, a little bit of comedy. It's unique enough so far. I mean, it could fall into some of its own patterns, and season four could be a real disappointment. I'm not super keen on this. What's already becoming an overly convoluted sort of through line about this. This missing guy that witnessed, and they already connected it to Detroit. That it connected it to Arkin with he witnessed the big guy in Detroit kill somebody 30 years ago.
You know what's a nice thing they've done though with all the different bad guys is it's always nice to have one. You don't have to really focus on one so you get sick of them. Because every time Jared Burns comes back, he's awesome. Everyone loves him, and he's great. He's living in a trailer right there.
Wayne Duffy.
Yeah,
the Torkelson dad.
Yeah, but he's just so. Dry and sarcastic, and he's got those super evil eyebrows.
Well, he's gotten much better, but in season three.
But and he had moments where like you can tell he's scared to death, but he still just jokes around.
Yeah. And then he actually did paint that room.
Yeah,
I love that. Yeah, and then he walked in, and it's like no, he's like pulling the tape, and it's like oh boy, Wayne Duffy did the painting himself.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll see. It's tricky to see with season four, but season three was good.
And every time I go to Vegas, I stay at the Wayne Duffy.
What I liked about this last one was that they started to get the ball rolling on the whole main through line.
The ball is rolling, but it's a ball rolling episode. And then you act like it was some...
It kind of is, but like it... With the heel people, and then you get him and Boyd together again, so you get a little humor there. You do more with...
You like McRaney, right? Gerald McRaney.
Gerald McRaney, Major Dad, showed up for a bit.
Well, and that was their Deadwood reunion.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, he was looking for the color. Mm-hmm. And then got his foot cut off. And that's an interesting way to kind of lead into the next one or whatever. I liked the quick interaction between Tim and the former military guy. That was right. That was good. And the former military guy's interaction, just in general, like he's running around scared, trying to find the girl. And the Alma May stuff, like, has always been so
annoying. I always like that guy in things, but it seems like...
Third Watch?
Well...
I mean, that's his name. It's Third Watch. Just call him Third Watch. So anyway, so Third Watch is good.
He was on the show called... What was that show?
There was a sitcom with like that he was on,
was
it, too.
Was that Men Behaving Badly?
It was something was like on? That, yeah.
And then he was in House of Sand and Fog, but he was big on something else that wasn't Third Watch. I always forget. But whenever he moves, he just seems so stiff and weird. He always seems so stiff.
I mean, this character, for sure.
No, he always has. He always has. In this, particularly so, because he's wearing a really bulky jacket all the time.
Yeah, and he's got the sunglasses, and he's kind of like, you know, he's like a dope addict, and he's something else is wrong with him, too.
I like that actor, though.
Yeah, he's good. I mean, that's what I mean, is it's like a... Right, this episode was...
I like when Boyd told him to take care of the guy, and he just shot him in the head.
Yeah, right. That was doing it. That was kind of a Pulp Fiction moment. It was definitely an Omar Leonard kind of thing. But I feel like, I don't know, I guess I just felt like optimistic about the season in this episode because it felt like things were, they were starting to set pieces into position for like what the real rest of the storyline is going to be. Like the thing with the sheriff and the girl, like whatever direction, that could go in an interesting direction or it could go in a stupid direction, but who knows. I just enjoyed the episode. Did you find it lacking or just...
It was lacking, it wasn't wheel spinning, it was just... It was a ball rolling one, and it wasn't particularly.
But they started making progress on itself. They started making progress
in itself.
Right, that's true. I guess
It was part of a larger thing. When the parts of the larger things happen, like from every season, I remember the climactic moments from the final episodes, and I don't remember a lot of the stuff leading up to it. But I do remember the standalone episodes that have nothing to do with those.
I get you.
This is like one of those forgettable ones. It's just part of the part
I feel
of the
like
whole.
For me, the thing I'm always going to remember about this one is probably the. I'll remember the stuff with the Hill People when they're stuck in the shed together for and then. Maybe that opening, the AV Club had it kind of right in their review. That opening sequence when, you know, at the gas station, when like that could have turned into, you know, a bloodbath, but didn't. Like that was interesting. Like the whole, oh, well, I'm a MP guy and he gives like a good rationale and kind of manages to talk. It made him a more interesting character than just a guy
who's much more level headed than
panic
he's
and
seen
shoot
in the first
people
couple,
and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's what I mean. Like, is that you started seeing. One big thing for me has been, and I don't know how it's going to go, but one thing I was disappointed about in the first couple episodes, or not so much, as I was just bored with, was this whole church stuff that they were doing. They were getting into this, and I'm like, is this going to be the big through line with the storyline? And they've kind of let that go, like it served its purpose. But I mean,
it didn't serve any purpose. It's coming back. Just they wouldn't do that if it...
But I don't think it's going to be a huge thing.
I think it is going to be a huge thing.
And I hope it doesn't, because I don't really need to sit there and sleep through... You know, crazy religious sermons for.
I hope the Jurassic Park AIDS kid pops up out of the box and he's alive. And he says, "I have risen."
The guy that looks like E.T.
The guy who looks like the kid from E.T.
Jeremy Davis.
Jeremy Davies.
Yeah, he got.
He got shot, but he didn't look like he was dead.
No.
So what happened to him?
I think he went back into the clinic.
But
right?
But they never showed that.
No, they.
It was in the last episode or the second to last episode.
Don't get rid of.
And he got blasted when the door opened.
Dickie Bennett. Yeah.
And yeah, I think Raylan's the one who shot him, right? Popped him in the guts, and then he's laying there moaning.
Yeah,
they didn't show him die.
No, I mean, but they made a point that like he's just stupid, and so it's kind of like.
But he's not just stupid because he's a coward.
Yeah,
and you always feel bad for him, but he's ruthlessly evil.
Right, but he's not smart.
Like in a scared rat kind of way. Just if he kills everyone, then they can't kill him.
Yeah,
and I always like when he's in the mix.
No, they'll probably throw him in the mix if they need to mix it up even more. Which
because him and Boyd are too equal. Boyd's smarter than him.
Yeah,
I think.
Boyd's way smarter than him.
Nobody just doesn't give a crap like Raymond. So Raylan. So he doesn't. Yeah. He doesn't really like. You can't rattle him.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't really rattle Boyd either, but Raylan always just seems to have, you know...
They're both angry guys.
Justice on his side or something.
They're both angry guys that, like, when things are inconvenient, like, it does bother them, but they play it off and they use their...
You throw a wild card in there. Like Dickie Bennett.
And everyone's angry about it.
His whole family's dead.
Yeah. He's got nothing to do, and that's the whole point. Is that when he was part of the family...
Bring him back.
I feel like... I don't know. Maybe they feel like they shouldn't have kept him around. Who knows? Maybe the writers should...
You think he was a weak link in last season?
I don't think he was a weak link in last season. You're right. He played as a wild card, but that season was so dense with stuff that between
Wynn... There's a ton of people in that.
Between Wynn and Boyd and Qualls and Limehouse and the dad. Mm-hmm. And then you throw Dickie in there too. It's a lot of moving parts, and it becomes a little like I said, like season three was good, but it was dense, but it might have been a season and a half.
It's a tough show to be overly critical of. The only thing I could really think of to say is that it does seem at a certain point in time like a lot of the characters have the same voice. They have the same sort of humor and the same sort of intellect. It's kind of like a Sorkin thing in a weird way, mm-hmm. where even the waitress and Raylan and his ex-wife and the judge and everyone just is all on the same.
They're
like,
all snarky, snappy, all similar intelligence.
And it feels, in some way, it's kind of a hey, just because we're from the South doesn't mean we're dumb.
Right.
I mean,
Faulkner,
you know?
Plenty of really stupid
Which is definitely not
more Larry thing also, because most of the people that populate the criminal underworld are just retards. That's usually the way it is in his books. And there's a few people pulling the strings who are a little smarter and a little more clever and stuff like that.
They get Shorty, right?
Yeah. Do whatever you want.
You're sitting there podcasting with Ian.
You say that like that's a bad thing.
It's an obligation.
It's an obligation.
To our listeners.
Contract. I'm required to do this.
By law.